Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hagen looked in a mirror before he went out in front of people and went, yeah, I look fine.
And God bless him for it.
What on that Hoover that was?
Yuckity yuck, McMannequin.
The British Bulldog is part of the new generation.
You may all bow before T-Mabel.
Here comes the jackknife.
On lives the new generation and the World Wrestling Federation.
Welcome, everyone, to the Cultaholic Classic Raw review as the other Cultaholic lads continue on their road to WrestleMania. We are here via the Ica Pro-powered DeLorean. Maybe it should be a Slim Jim-powered DeLorean now. Who knows? We are back in the doldrums of 1995, very much like Talking Head said on the road to nowhere. Who be we? I be Fake Geordie, radio presenter without portfolio, former Cultaholic heavyweight champion Tom Campbell, and I am with the bear in the big blue bar cage. He is the head pen of Cultaholic. Doesn't need a pencil. He gets it right every single gosh darn time. He is Justin Henry, and he has authority here, Jackie Weaver, and he is off of America.
It should have actually been more exciting than the Super Bowl.
Did you not enjoy the superb owl the other week?
I didn't hate it because I'm not part of that fan contingent who needs a high scoring game to enjoy it. Like, I enjoy when one defense is just so stout that it has beat the crap out of another offense. So that's fine in that sense, but it wasn't really. It was kind of disappointing. I thought it'd be a competitive game.
Because it was kind of that Super Bowl is always considered like the non-fans game because it's always like a high-scoring, highfalutin type experience. And it kind of lacked that energy a bit.
Well, I did think it was kind of funny when people on Twitter were like, oh my God, it's a packed stadium. We're screwed. We're screwed. It's like most of them are cardboard cutouts.
All with a terrible case of Fold It 19.
Ah, I see what you did there.
We can joke about it now because we're quite far down the road. A lot of cardboard cutouts there. Something that apparently WWE are considering for WrestleMania.
Yeah. It's the crowd's really flat this year. Ah,
mate, I'm happy to. I'll pitch them. You knock them out the park.
I mean, the second loudest. The second quietest crowd in Mania history was 36, and the least quiet was 19.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Where will this one be?
Well, they have a heat machine.
Behind 36, weirdly. Oh, yeah, they've got the heat machine. Oh, gosh, they'll have the deluxe heat machine for WrestleMania.
Oh, yeah, just and they have access to a cannon in that stadium.
Oh no! They're going to fire a T-shirt at a cardboard cutout, and the head's going to come flying off.
Oh God! Mort Flanders died again.
I did have an idea for the fans at Wrestling Mania if they are going to use cardboard cutouts.
Wrestling Mania.
Wrestling Mania. Mm-hmm. I mentioned this on the news on Monday. What if we have an entire row of cardboard cutouts of R-Truth? So when the 24/7 goobers come looking for him, he can hide amongst the cutouts.
And somehow Drew Gulak and Akira Tozawa lose to the cardboard cutouts.
Yeah. A cardboard cutout falls on R-Truth. R-Truth loses the belt to R-Truth.
It's like a Mortal Kombat mirror match, but not as gruesome.
Oh, do it. They'll do it. I hope they do it. What are we doing? We can't talk about wrestling from the now. We have to talk about wrestling from off of the past, namely...
We are Kick Wickham.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Ron the Truth Killings, or K-Crush, as he was known at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked exactly the same. We are back in 1995. Before we give you the rundown of the week in wrestling, where and when are we, Justin Henry?
Well, this show is broadcast on Monday, May 1st, 1995. This was taped 1 week earlier at the Civic Auditorium in Omaha, Nebraska.
Okay, so this week, I mean, we'll talk about Omaha, Nebraska in just a minute, but there's a lot going on in Korea this week in the news, Justin. We have reached that point in our timeline where you and I get to talk about Collision in Korea. This was quite the event, the wrestling event that took place in conjunction with New Japan and WCW. It took place out of Pyongyang, North Korea, between the 28th of April and the 29th of April of 1995. Now, this is something as a wrestling historian, I'm sure you're very aware of, Justin.
Talking.
Yes. Oh, he's back.
Pause that, because I was grabbing Bischoff's book for an anecdote I was going to read from that show.
Excellent, excellent. Justin Henry has brought Eric Bischoff's autobiography, Controversy Creates Cash, along with him to discuss this one. Something that, as a wrestling historian, you are no doubt very aware of, Justin. And
I'm very aware of it, although I haven't really seen much of the show. There is going to be a Dark Side of the Ring that covers this topic this coming season, so I'm very fascinated by it. This is going to be quite an eye-opener. Some have called this the original Crown Jewel / Grizz Rumor / whatever because of some of the uncomfortableness, discomfort, shall we say, that the people who had to go on this tour face, and a lot of uncertainty. So I wanted to read this anecdote from Eric Bischoff's book to give you an idea of what they were up against here. Having never experienced a communist country, and especially one still stuck in the 1950s, I didn't know what to expect. I anticipated our rooms would be bugged and that kind of shit, but I had no idea the extent for which that was true. Scott Norton found out. Now, Scott is a great guy. He has this powerful, deep baritone voice that shakes the walls when he talks. He's about 6'3", 6'4", weighs 300 or 400 pounds. Powerful guy. But Scott hates traveling. I think he'd rather take an ice pick to the ribcage and get on a plane. He can't stand being on buses because he gets claustrophobic. He's in the wrong business because in our business, you have to travel a lot. Anyway, soon after we got to Korea, Scott went to take a bath. The bathtub separated from the wall. Well, that started shit. He got on the phone. How he figured out how to use it is beyond me because no one else could. He called his wife and bitched about everything. The room, the food, the secret police, North Korea in general. He MF'd those people all night long. Clearly, there was someone listening in who could understand English. When Scott came back to his hotel room the next day, the sheets were stripped off of his bed and his room was turned upside down. No one would clean or go near his room for the rest of the trip. We were real careful what we said and did after that.
Jeez. So Scott Norton, after making a phone call to his wife, some reports have said he was almost arrested as well.
Really?
Like, off the back of this. One report that I read said that when he was on the phone to his wife, as soon as he referred to North Korea as a SH1T hole, the phone line went dead.
Mm.
And so there was obviously something occurring there, but that wasn't the beginning or the end of some of the stuff around the show. So to give you a little bit of an oversee of some of the other events from it, Eric Bischoff, who you're reading the book from, he'll also say in that book that he didn't tell Turner Broadcasting about his plans to do a show in Korea. He just sort of organized them and then went for the route that you'd rather seek forgiveness as opposed to ask permission. So by the time they realized what was happening, it was already, the wheels were already well and truly in motion.
Well, the faces of the tour, weren't they Inoki and Muhammad Ali?
They were indeed, yes. The heels were, one of the heels was Ric Flair. He and Inoki had a heck of a match on the second night. Which was a superb effort, but it wasn't meant to be Flair because Inoki wanted to face Hulk Hogan. And Eric Bischoff says in his book that when he asked Hogan whether or not he would want to come to Korea to face Inoki, Hogan acted as if he'd asked him to row to Pluto. Not so much. And that a number of things. One, because obviously Korea is very much North Korea is a very a hotbed of political discussion, to say it very, very lightly. But also Hogan at this point wasn't ready to hang up the babyface boots yet. He was still loving life as a good guy. Wasn't ready to go to North Korea where there was this massive anti-American sentiment. He would definitely be booed. And that wasn't in his plans. We had a fight on the first night between Road Warrior Hawk and Too Cold Scorpio. Not in the ring. This is behind the scenes. They're just getting hot and bothered and flustered with each other and they end up scrapping. So it's all going well so far. And on the day that they're set to leave Korea, This is from Ric Flair's book, To Be the Man. Ric Flair says that he was approached by the North Korean, the ambassadors for North Korea, and they wanted Ric Flair to do a speech before leaving to the members of the press and such, to say that he now knows why the US is afraid of North Korea and how North Korea is a powerful nation and how powerful and much better the culture in North Korea is. And Flair was told, look, you've got to do this before you get on the plane. Ric Flair did a speech where he kind of went away from that. Instead, he was very gracious to the hosts, to North Korea, to the great leader, Kim Il-sung. He was very, very flattering and complimentary to him. And that was a big risky move from Flair's point of view, because Flair had this script that he had to read and he went away from it, managed to get out of the country though. They all flew away and they never went back. It was a bit of a scary time, according to Flair and to Bischoff's book, for everyone involved, but it remains a record drawing two nights of wrestling, 340,000 people overall, most people from North Korea who weren't massive fans of wrestling, but were politely cajoled to attend the event, shall we say. And that's Korea.
Well, you say it was a very scary time. I imagine that's why we're getting a Dark Side of the Ring on it.
Mm-hmm. So imagine what I've said there, but an hour long.
And I wonder if Scott Norton's going to be unshell-shocked enough to give his take on it, because I know he commented on the Road Warriors documentary last season, so they obviously have his contact if he's willing to discuss his memories of that.
I'm hoping that he will. He headlined the first night to Scott Norton. Scott Norton and Ric Flair were the US headliners for that show, which is weird when you think about it.
Well, Norton was a big star in Japan. He was former IWGP heavyweight champ, so it does make sense.
But in an event that was put on by WCW, where Scott Norton wasn't considered a top guy, it is strange.
This is the same year where Scott Norton jobs at Randy Savage on Nitro after John Tenta fell on Norton's legs.
I think it was this year. I think this was the year it happened.
And referee just ignored this 400-pound man laying across a guy's thighs. Why he get hit with a flying elbow smash and just counts the pin anyway. It's one of the best inexplicable finishes ever.
Some legal nonsense from the WWF. This comes from the Pro Wrestling Torch of the year. Nails, a.k.a. Kevin Wakeholtz, has reached out. Did I pronounce it wrong?
I've never actually heard it spoken, so you could be right for all I know.
Okay.
I was always like Wakeholtz or something.
Wakeholtz. Well, either way, Nails with a Z. Okay. Reached an out-of-court settlement with the WWF. So this follows the suit in December 92. Nails jumping Vince McMahon, getting angry about his payoff for SummerSlam, choking him in the locker room. And this led to a 911 call. This led to Nails making the 911 call to say that Vince McMahon had sexually assaulted him. McMahon was like, no, I'm going to sue you back. They've gone back and forth for years. We now settle out of court. What do you remember of Nails and his time in the WWF?
And I believe the initial dust-up started when he was mad over a SummerSlam payoff for beating Virgil in 3 minutes.
I mean, $8,000. To beat Virgil.
Wrestlers, you know, can feel how they feel about their pay. It's their pay. It's their right to feel how they feel. But the whole incident is just, it's so bizarre. And I remember Bret Hart in his book saying that some guys in the locker room actually looked up to Nails for covering his tracks the way he did to paint Vince as the bad guy in that scenario as fast as he did. And it was this, and And Brett made it like Nails was a legit scary human being, because he said every time Nails was, you could hear him screaming at Vince in the office, and this sounds like something being thrown or something being pounded. He would just shudder because like Nails was an intimidating guy. Mm. I mean, and as a kid, he was intimidating with just his narrow eyes and the way his mouth hung open, the way he glared at you. And of course, that distorted voice. I don't know if you ever knew this, but Nails' voice in WWF, that was not his actual voice.
It was the drop down tones, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the Josh Matthews treatment, because he did an independent show where he called out Boss Man, and he sounds like Larry the Three Stooges.
Guess what, Boss Man? We're gonna get it.
Or like half Vince, half Boss, half Larry Fine. It's like what? Like, it blew my mind. It's like seeing Batman without the mask.
We end on more of WCW wrestlers doing something political to possibly anger an entire nation. Hulk Hogan is opening an Italian restaurant. Hulk Hogan officially putting his name to the Mall of America's latest eatery, Pastamania. It's opening on the 15th of June, 1995. The announcement has come down today from Dave's Observer from This Week in Wrestling, This Bloody Week in Wrestling. This is supposed to be the initial in which they are trying to turn into a franchise. They are negotiating leases in Baltimore and Philadelphia and plan to open 5 restaurants this year, another 25 in 96. The company plans on introducing Hulk Hogan pasta and sauces for supermarket distribution this summer. Now, that's a product that sounds like a winner. That's Dave Meltzer there getting pissy about pasta in the Wrestling Observer.
Well, I don't know everything that happens in Philadelphia, especially when I was 11 years old, but I can almost bet the farm here that we never got Pastamania in Philly. Yes, absolutely. Some overpriced SpaghettiOs sounds good.
I genuinely believe that if Pastamania was indeed still a thing, I'd insist that when we eventually do the Classic Raw Review live, we would do it from there. But sadly, that is not going to happen because the franchise no longer exists. I've pulled up here a little menu from Pastamania.
Let's hear it.
It's now these are 1995 prices. Angel hair pasta in white clam sauce, right?
Okay.
If you want that with Swedish meatballs, it's going to cost you $9 in 1995.
Wait, hang on. I have my inflation calculator here.
What does that work out as on the old inflationometer?
You said $9?
$9.
$15.28.
Oh, that's a lot of money for some pasta shells. Okay, they've got a list here, right? And it says pastas and then sauces, so you mix it up. So your sauces are marinara, Alfredo, pesto, white clam, and garlic and oil. The last one's quite lazy. Pastas... angel hair, shells, fettuccine, pen, nuggets.
Okay.
What's a nuggets pasta?
Nuggets pasta? Is that like stuffed shells?
Pasta nuggets. I'm Googling pasta nuggets. Pasta. Okay. They are. Oh, 1 second. Hello? Hello? Oh, bear with me. Someone's at the door. 1 second.
Sure.
And it'll be the good lady. It wasn't the good lady. It was the
delivery man.
My apologies. We've ordered Pablo a bed that goes over the radiator.
Oh, nice.
So I'll fit that for him tonight. He'll be delighted.
Right. Should be. Or he'll be finicky, one or the other.
Oh, yeah, he'll probably look at it, sit in it for 30 seconds, and then ignore it forever. So that's
poor Harley here is wondering why I don't buy him a bed to go over the radiator.
Oh, where's my bed, Dada? I've looked at pasta nuggets.
Tom.
There he is. Hey, buddy. Harley.
He's afraid. He's a little afraid.
Oh, what a boy. That's the first time I met Harley.
Harley, that was Tom.
Hi, Harley.
He's just sniffing around now. He's a little shy.
Oh, bless him. We should get Harley and Pablo to meet at some point.
I don't know. You don't like other cats.
They could do the Raw review together.
They should.
They will continue our legacy. It'll be golden.
It's like when Sasha Banks carried on Eddie's legacy. You're part of his legacy now. Not his son-in-law, Aiden English, but Sasha Banks.
Hey, no, moving on. No chance.
So jump back in here.
Okay. What's, I'll go, what's Hulk's power pasta? I hear you ask, Justin.
Power pasta.
For $4.99, you can get penny pasta with chicken, veggies, and either chicken marinara and fettuccine primavera.
Power pasta.
Power pasta. I don't know how it's different. I'm hoping they're shaped like little Hulk Hogan's.
Boy, thank God that was an exhibit egg in the trial.
Now, the issue is that none of the things on this that I'm looking at have any description. And it's a very, in fact, what I'm going to do, I'm going to do a cheeky screen share with my good friend Justin Henry so you can see this. So that's, that is a Pastamania menu right there. And it is highly generic. It is an Arial font. It is on a white paper. And it just has everything in block capitals. Now, the concern for me isn't so much like pick your pasta, pick your sauces. Do you want Swedish meatballs with it? Well, a bit extravagant turkey tetrazzini with it. Get amongst it. Well,
what is turkey tetrazzini? That sounds, whatever it is, it sounds good.
I seem to remember somebody on Maury was talking about making it on an episode of Maury. Some woman going, chicken tetrazzini. That's the only time I've ever heard it mentioned. My main concern, though, is on the at the bottom of here, where it says, for little pasta maniacs, which sounds like somebody that's committed pasticide, for $2.99, you can get either Hulkaroni and cheese, which is, okay, it's macaroni and cheese, cheeseburger pasta, okay, that's pasta with meat and cheese, Hulkios. It doesn't tell you what a Hulkio is, and I can't use my process of remuneration.
May I? Oh,
he's in.
Hey, a Hulkio is like a Machio, but with worse kicks.
I don't know what kick I'm going to get from a Hulkio. I don't know what a Hulkio is. It doesn't even, like, as a parent, you would like to know what the kid's going to eat. I bet Hulkio's was the lowest seller.
So does the FDA.
Hulk would go on to mention Hulk U's as well as an. I don't think it was on the initial menu. They obviously added it, but added it.
Well, Hulk U too.
Hulk U too, you mother Hulker. I don't know what a Hulk U. They don't tell you anything on here. It's like somebody just went, here's a copy of Word 95. Can you make a menu?
Train, say your prayers and be vague.
Hulk's power pasta. There you go. So that is. Please, if you do, you can seek it out online. If you feel inclined to do so, you can check out the menu for Pastamania, Hulk Hogan's restaurant.
I see beef stroganoff. It should have been beefcake stroganoff, shouldn't it?
What? When we watch the first ever Nitro. Shall we try? I might try and make one of these, but I feel like this is the most basic of dinners. Get some angel hair pasta, get some pesto sauce, congratulations, and then hand over $9 if you want some stroganoff with it.
Hey, Hogan, you want some jabberoni? That doesn't work for me, brother.
Just some careeroni? No, oh, I'd rather row to Pluto. brother. So, we hope you've had your dinner. If not, maybe get yourself some Hulkios, because it is time for Justin Henry to talk us through this week's episode of Monday Night Raw from Off of the Wrestling.
Well, Tom, when we left last week, this may have been off.
I wish we had left last week.
When we went off air, I can't remember.
It was a blur. I remember just sitting in a very dark room for a little while and crying.
Well, it was before.
I woke up and I was outside.
I think we had just gotten to the end of the show, and you asked if next week's show looked any good. So I looked it up. I'm like, oh no, this looks terrible. Just from reading the matches and having no memory specifically. Well, I have to amend that a little bit. Now, this is not a good show. This is not a good show by any stretch. However, it accidentally overachieved.
Yeah, I mean, what it was from watching it, it was a very full 45 minutes of wrestling. There was a lot in here. And it's not going to win show of the year. It had a clear goal. And on the whole, it achieved it.
Well, not just that. I'm talking about the jobbers' outfits.
Oh, they look great this week. The lost property bin at WWF Raw was particularly generous this week, because some of these enhancement boys looked enhanced,
to say the very least.
I swear to God, yeah. And this is my theory. If you're new to this podcast, this is my true hack theory for the wrestling. Is that the enhancement guys, but in the mid to late 90s, I think they had their own gear when they wrestled elsewhere, but when they got to the Raw taping, there was just like a box of lost property, and they had to make an outfit out of whatever was in there. Because either that, or there's some really disgusting wrestlers on the periphery in the mid-90s.
Yeah, but there's that theory, or just some of them have really good taste. So we have to get to this. Well, first we start out with this recap of the Bigelow Diesel match from last week, where Kevin Nash accidentally won with a Batista bomb.
It was a lovely Batista bomb, though.
And we get the post-match. Yeah, well, that's true. Get the post-match turn where Bigelow turns face after Sid power bombs him / pile drives him. It was a power drive.
He's invented a new move then.
You have selected power drive.
Would you like to play again? You've selected no.
Would you like to fix Bam Bam's neck? You have selected no.
Where's Bam Bam? He is in the parking lot.
Bam Bam is in ICU. Would you like to practice power bomb making safer? You have selected no.
No. I'll tell you who never went to ICU.
Zap.
John Cena.
That's right. Okay. He did an ad for something last night at the Super Bowl, because he recorded us on the Monday after.
Was he advertising John Cena?
No, he was advertising some. I remember that the ad had like this pinkish purplish tint to it. He was driving in the car with somebody.
Oh, was it Jolly Rancher?
Was it Jolly Rancher? Might have been.
It was some sort of confection. John Cena superb owl ad.
All I know is there were three.
Mountain Dew.
Okay, because there was three XW title holders on last night's broadcast: Cena, Batista, and Gronk.
It's true. All the top lads.
So, on the heels of Sid brutalizing Bigelow tonight, we have Sid versus Razor Ramon, or so they say.
Oh.
So Lawler still angling for that match with Brett in your house, because you know Brett's already set to face Hakushi. Make Brett work twice. Interesting way to weasel into a match now.
Yeah. We'll get to that when we get to the end of the show.
I know. I'm hurrying right now because I got to get to this first match. The Allied Powers.
Yay!
Versus George Anderson and my new favorite enhancement talent, Ron Hagen.
You liked Big Ron too as well, didn't you?
Ron Hagen.
I love when I know Justin's going to go on a rant, because he'll say the name of who's going to rant. He'll take a little clap of his mouth and he'll go back. So like, we're like, buckle in. Mm-hmm. Henry's holding court.
For those of you who've never seen Ron Hagen, and I didn't remember him before this match, but by God, I wish I had. Ron Hagen looks like John Cazale from the Godfather movies. if he grew a giant mustache and shopped at Marty Jannetty's yard sale.
I would say he looked like Tom Cazale of the Godfather movies if he was a rocker.
John, this is what I want. I want Michael and Fredo as the rockers.
Hey, he'll be good at that. He'll be good at that because top marks to John Eiley, who this week was on BBC Radio Sunderland.
Really?
Yes. They were asking people what movies you've never seen.
Oh, right.
That you should. And John Eiley commented on my Facebook and said, I've never seen The Godfather. I said, right, and you need to tell Alex that. So lo and behold, Alex sets him up with Tamsin Robson, who presents the mid-morning show on BBC Sunderland. Alex is producing it. And before we know it, John is on Radio Sunderland. And this weekend he watched The Godfather and he reported back on it on Monday. Yeah. It was lovely about to time. Hear. Yes, he's done it. He's watched The Godfather. Well done, John.
So
what's he making? What's he making? What's he making?
Well, he's going to make Michael and Fredo the rockers. And what you're going to do is you're going to have – it's going to be the I Knew It Was You, Fredo scene. And then and right before he throws him through the window, basically. Because that's George, you don't come to Omaha and you don't talk to the Allied powers like that. Which is funny because so who's Mo Green, Bulldog or Luger?
Mo Green. Oh.
Well, Luger took less green when he went to WCW later that year for his loyalty.
Who's the biggest sellout? Because it'll definitely be.
Well, Bulldog took less green 2 years later when he gave the money back in order to get out of his contract.
Luger wanted Mo Green. So Mo Green should be Luger.
And you're right, because we also say, like, could Luger be any Mo Green when he's running the ropes?
I don't know, Green.
And his glasses are too shattered, Billy. I watched The Godfather game for the 7 millionth time in my life.
Yeah, do it. He's quite, anyway, he's quite the looker, isn't he? Our cavalcade of enhancement boys this week.
See,
Ron Hagen. I want to see. He's only my second best this week, but that is no disrespect to Ron Hagen. It's a tough Mr. Universe this week of enhancement talent.
I know. It's like I mean the Garish Rocker singlet would have been enough by itself, but. It's the John Cazale hairline and an additional like thick guppy mustache that he has going that puts it over the top.
Ron Hagen, right? Ron, I think on this, Justin. Ron Hagen looked in a mirror before he went out in front of people, in front of humans, and went, "Yeah, I look fine."
and God bless him for it.
God bless him for doing that.
You know what he is? He's the even colder Mike Austin of Marty Jannetty.
Temperature gauge broken, Mike Austin.
So,
is he too hot or too cold? Well, we'll never know.
So, they discussed Jarrett Vickie near Continental Belt over the weekend. Oh, yeah, that happened. That's kind of important. But who cares? We have Ron Hagen. I gotta mention this part. They mentioned that Kid has the 1-2-3 Kid has a neck injury, mm-hmm. and he's been sidelined. And Vince, I think Vince is about to say, "We wish him the very best. We wish him well. We wish him a speedy recovery." No. He says, "We wish he were here."
Yeah, that's a weird line.
It's like goddamn, it's just a neck injury. You can work through it. You've been doing it for years.
But it looked like he might be done, like properly. We'll talk about it when we get to Bob Holly.
Screwed up his neck pretty bad.
Yeah, really bad. We'll get to it in a bit. But yeah, it was a weird line saying, "Wish you were here," because that's what you say when you're on holiday.
I was like, God damn it, you should be working.
The weather is here. Wish you were beautiful.
So Luger gives George Blanderson some generic stuff because George Anderson is wearing just a generic black singlet.
George isn't trying.
Ron Hagen is a peacock, and George Hagen is essentially he's like dryer lint by comparison.
Dryer lint, George Anderson. Christ, what a pair of bollocks! By temperature gauge broken Ron Hagen and dryer lint, George Anderson. Put the tag belts on them immediately.
These two men cannot be more opposite.
Put the belts on them, you absolute cowards.
Team contrast.
Christ, yeah. Turn your contrast up or down. We don't know. Both.
Forget team extreme. This is the two extremes. We're going to do the Ron Hagen podcast from now on. That's all it's going to be.
This is now a Ron Hagen Stan account.
So the only other interesting thing about this match is that I realized that Davey
There's
Boy.
There's nothing else interesting. It's just Ron Hagen.
Well, that's one way of looking at it. Davey Boy was pinned at WrestleMania 3 by the referee.
Oh my God, he was!
It just hit me at one point.
Oh my God! Didn't spot Danny it Davis. With Danny Davis. Gee, oh, that's a moment. I was hoping Bulldog could have maybe played on that a little bit. Maybe giving him a little funny eye as he walks in, like
tombstone him again. Spike him on his head. We did it, Mania 3.
Oh my God. Danny Davis and Bulldog reunited. Mm-hmm. And Ron Hagen.
Speaking of Hagen, we come to my favorite spot of the match. You know the Bret Hart cross corner whip where he hits the buckles and then flies back like he's been shot?
Ah, yes.
Well, Davey Boy sends him flying into the post. Hagen does the chest first bump, but he sticks. He forgets to either fall backwards or he's just so pained he's trying to hold himself up at this point.
His outfit's Velcro. He's stuck to the ring.
He's like the kid in the bumper cars who gets stuck in the corner so the operator has to curve to like push him off so he can get going again.
I think he wanted to bounce out the corner, but he couldn't figure out how to move.
The science has had enough of him.
Oh, Ron.
So for some reason on this show, I'm not sure if you caught this, Jerry Lawler was like assigning occupations and backstories to all the enhancement talent.
I thought this was strange. I mean, like, he does this for Butler Stevens later on as well.
Which is a great name.
He's in pest control. Oh, he's even better guy. But he's in pest control. Yeah, weird this bit. I mean, I kind of get...
Like, use each other?
Yeah, I think it's just Lawler just riffing. Just, you know, he doesn't want to do any... Because Lawler famously always said, I like to organically react to everything I'm seeing, which is normally the lazy man's excuse for not doing any work. Mm. I like to just organically react to it. No, you're just lazy. You've not done any prep. That's fine. You know, you can still react to stuff organically and still do your prep. I'm just saying. When I did commentary, I'd always look up who the wrestlers were so I could give them the due diligence. I just, if I didn't want to know who won a match, I wouldn't find out.
Well, there's also the Art Donovan approach where you just inquire about weights and measures.
That too also works. How much does this guy weigh?
Why is this guy dressed like a cotton candy thing?
Why is this guy looking like the Godfather was the rocker?
This guy will be taken out in the boat and shot by Michael's henchman.
Hey, is this real?
What is this guy in the Deer Hunter?
Forgot about Art Donovan.
John Cazalford, as we don't know, but never bring up his name. The man made five movies in his life. They were all all nominated for Academy Awards, and he sadly died young of cancer. So, like per capita, he had the greatest film career ever because he never had a bad movie.
Yeah, 100%.
Godfather 2, Deer Hunter, Conversation, and Dog Day Afternoon.
All bangers. If that was all he did, then that is the perfect film career.
Yeah. I mean, sadly died young, but on the other hand, never made a stinker.
His Metacritic rating is extremely high.
It's got to be the highest of anybody ever. Yeah. Yeah. Five movies.
He's literally the best actor ever. If you were just using numbers.
John Cazale might be.
John Cazale is the best actor ever.
So, match just ends when Bulldog pins Anderson. I mentioned the jobs. Apparently, Anderson works in fire science, while Hagen works for the water department in Omaha.
Even more of a contrast, and I love it. Like, they are like the ultimate tag team that shouldn't get along but do.
It is kind of funny they put it that way. He's just, that's his way of saying, like, they're nothing alike. Like a buddy sitcom.
All the more reason why I'm pulling for him.
He likes colors. This one's bland. These two are going to jobber land.
He's got a mullet and he is bland. He's got colors and he is bland. He works at the fire department and he is bland. What a right pair. Bland or not bland. Hey, I'm bland. I'm not so bland. And we're the jobbers.
Lawler's not funny. Vince needs LASIK. This one looks like Sherber, and this one's basic.
I originally said that Butler Stevens was my favorite enhancement talent on this show, but
you're cutting in and out.
Oh, am I back now? Is that all right?
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, you were just choppy for a moment.
Oh, no. I don't know what happened there. Hang on. Okay. Well, as I said, I'll do... My favorite jobber of this show was originally Butler Stevens, but after talking to you, I think it is Ron Hager.
Well, I mean, Butler Stevens will have his moment of judgment here.
He certainly will.
I'm not sure he'll inspire the same amount of inspiration that Mr. Hagen has.
I don't think he will, you know. Mm-hmm.
Why is there a Hagen Mania pasta place with extra water?
just all these pasta shells dipped in dye.
it's like a Paz Easter egg factory. So Bulldog finishes off Anderson. That's as long as we've ever covered a jobber match, I think.
That really, really is. But now, Allied Powers look the part. I'll say that. They look the part. From the entrance, the pyro, the rocket's red glare, which now makes sense because Luger's out there with him. That's forgivable. Like, they're built like machines. They're just a bit crap. But they look the part. That's half the battle.
I think Luger's mentally checked out. And Davey Boy... I'm just saying, like, he needs the right opponent.
Yeah.
You put him in there with a Brett or an Owen or a Shawn, you're getting gold. Mm-hmm. You put him in there with a Slug. You put him in there with someone that's not the most coordinated, not the most technically skilled wrestler. You're going to get basic at best. Mm-hmm. So basically, Bulldogs, some matches is Ron Hagen, and other matches, he's George Anderson.
We all would like to be a little bit Ron Hagen.
We all would be.
We all would like to be a little Ron Hagen.
We get highlights of Action Zone the day before when Bob Holly challenged Jeff Jarrett for the Intercontinental Championship. Jarrett cheated to get the win. The match was restarted when Tim White came out and dimed Jarrett out. So Holly wins the restarted match, but Jarrett's foot is on the rope. But still, Holly has the Intercontinental belt, which is kind of a weird sight because he never officially won it ever.
And he left with it, which is quite exciting.
He did. So now we have a controversy. And we learned that Jack Tunney from his Fortress of Solitude, which is just a two-story brownstone up in Brantford, Ontario.
Did we say it's like a burned-out shack in Toronto that just says WWF Canada? Isn't that what we said a while ago?
There's my decision that the landlord could fuck off.
And there's a room with bags full of money that just say, for the kids, love from Roddy Piper.
Scrooge McTunney.
I'll take it to the kids.
John Tunney is Scrooge. Whether it's the, whether it's the DuckTales version or George C. Scott playing him in that great 1984 movie, whichever.
You, dear boy, what day is this? Furthermore, is the turkey in the shop still there?
Unequivocally, I'm tired of you, ghost.
You're more gravy than the grave.
It does occur to me, though, that, I mean, Tunney doesn't appear on camera here, but he is mentioned in passing as having made a decision to hold the belt up. I think this might be the last Jack Tunney decision in WWF history.
Oh, really?
I think it might be.
Because I didn't think we got Gorilla Monsoon as the president for a little while yet.
July.
Oh, really? Oh, gosh. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's creeping up.
So, yeah, this is that was made in conjunction with the fact that WWF stopped using the Tunney family to help book Maple Leaf Gardens and book Toronto. So once they started doing it on their own, at that point going forward, they had no more need for the Tunneys, and just that's when they got rid of Jack.
It's cruel, isn't it? Like, just to go, we don't need you anymore for what we're doing, so off you go. Down the road.
It is what it is.
That it is. But when it comes to the Action Zone stuff, so this is Bob Holly and Jeff Jarrett going back and forth for the IC title, a match that was supposed to contain the 1-2-3 kid, Sean Waltman. Bob Holly was a replacement. And this comes from The Observer from this particular week, saying the career of 22-year-old 1-2-3 kid Sean Waltman somewhat in jeopardy after suffering a broken neck at the 24th of April tapings in Omaha. The injury acknowledged on WWF television programs this past weekend was believed to be an aggravation of an injury suffered a few days earlier while on the European tour. Kidd had suffered a brain concussion on the 12th of March in Anaheim, tried to come back too soon, was shaken up again 1 week later during a show in Madison Square Garden. This left him well below 100% for a show 1 week later at Tokyo Sumo Hall. Can you fathom, in 2021, WWE having a guy on their roster that gets a brain concussion, allows them to continue wrestling a show in New York, then a show in Sumo Hall, and then his and then not only injures his neck, but then exacerbates it a week later? Could you imagine that there'd be a scandal if that happened in 2021?
Oh, absolutely. And just to amend that a little bit, I know Dave is reporting that in good faith. When I spoke to Waltman a few years ago for an interview, he talked about the injuries he sustained in this period. I think he put a lot of it on Hakushi not catching him properly on a dive, or is either that or Hakushi came at him too high on a dive. And it was something where they were not on the same page, and it was just unfortunate what happened, but Kidd sustained a bad injury off of a match those two had together. I'm not sure where it fits in with that timeline in particular, or how Kidd remembers it and how it was reported. But yeah, it's definitely at this point, it wasn't looking good for Kidd. And based on my memories, I think he was supposed to be the initial replacement for Razor in King of the Ring 95. And we got what we got. And it still might have sucked, but if Kidd were in the match, it might have been a little better.
Mm-hmm.
The ultimate underdog.
Mm-hmm.
Playing the role of a certain someone who's coming in very soon.
Well, Waltman, we wish you were here.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Bob Holly, speaking of the devil, versus Butler Stevens.
Ah, yes! Butler Stevens! Right, this lad.
Okay.
Beautiful, beautiful standard issue black trunks. What looks like a bin bag with the arms cut off on the top of it. And you get one shot, really, at greatness when you're a jobber. When they've announced the top guy over the music, over the loud music of the wrestler, the actual talent, and the crowd, and Vince and Jerry Lawler plugging Duckman, the camera will cut to you and it'll say your name along the bottom. Butler Stevens has this one moment, this one shot at making his impression, and he does this pose where he throws his arms up in the air and he pulls his neck down over his chin. I don't know whether you've seen, is it 90 Day Fiancé?
I've heard of it. I will never watch that show.
Right. There's a guy in it called Ed.
Sounds good.
Who
exciting.
He's a bit of a meme. He's become a bit of a meme, basically. So if you were to type it, like, there's quite a few images of this guy. There's of GIFs of this guy where it's a guy with no neck. If you type in 90 Day Fiancé Ed, you'll see Big Ed, as he might be known, you'll see exactly who I mean, because he is doing the Butler Stevens face as Butler Stevens is pandering to the hard cam. God love Big Ed, but he's doing a Big Ed.
It's like a rhino or a turtle.
he's like an adorable bollard. He really is. And so Butler Stevens wearing a bin bag.
That's not natural looking. He looks like Strong Mad.
Strong Mad. I am a 90 Day Fiancé.
Bob Holly, I'll put you over.
I hate Bob Holly.
Why am I dressed like I'm going to a rave?
So that's Butler Stevens. in that face out as the camera cuts to him. God bless him. He, for whatever reason, he went, this is the face I'm going to do. And it will live with me in him for me. Because he doesn't look like that normally, is the thing.
He watches it today and he goes, nailed it.
Yeah, he probably thought that was a good face. That was a good face. But it's like a weird bin bag with a white trim. It's an odd look. I can only assume that he grabbed the items thinking that they matched. Now, the last time we saw him, he was in the WWF some while ago in a jobber capacity, Butler Stevens, and he had a lovely sort of short, Ric Flair-esque short robe on, which is far more flattering than whatever this is. And he had a mullet and a moustache back in the day. If he'd rocked up with all that, he'd have been fine.
I mean, he's dressed like he's going to like a punk concert or like an industrial metal concert. It's sort of like that look with the vinyl top that he has on here. It is a very odd look, and we learned during the match that from Jerry Lawler, who's revealing these men's backstories, is that he's a pest control operator. Okay.
Why not?
It's just a very basic match. Holly wants some fast-paced offense early, including the big drop kick that he loves to do. Stevens gets some really wonky-looking knees in the corner. I'm not a wrestler. If I had to work a match right now, I would look so uncoordinated and probably hurt myself. I'm not trained in the slightest. But you know when someone just looks weird? This man is Holly cornered, grabs the ropes, pulls back like he's going to do like a belly bump, goes forward and puts his knee in so like unsubtly, and keeps pulling back and doing it over again. Like he's doing like this weird jerky motion. And it's just, this is someone that needs a little more seasoning, I think. Holly finished with the flying body press. And this almost was disastrous because Stevens, I imagine that when you make contact, you're supposed to kind of catch and fall back. Stevens kind of just didn't take any initiative there. So Holly kind of crashed into him like it was the Hindenburg and started going headfirst toward the mat. And then Stevens decided, okay, I better fall. Just like
the instinct is you kind of step, you kind of leap up and fall backwards. So you cushion the fall of the person coming at you. Instinctly. There was a line on commentary, which I thought was quite timely, which was Jerry Lawler talking about a live event and encouraging families and kids to come along, providing they take it, you know, providing you're taking your chickenpox vaccine.
I missed that line.
It was a line about the chickenpox vaccine, and it was in this week in history, in 1995, that the chickenpox vaccine was available. And it's just quite timely when you consider the world that we live in right now, where vaccines are being rolled out left, right, and center. And here's the chickenpox vaccine being rolled out for the first time.
Oh, yeah. And Lawler also mentioned, make sure you get your cardboard cutouts vaccinated too, so that people on Twitter don't have a panic attack at the sight of so much congregating cardboard.
That cardboard is too close. Serviceable match puts Bob over them.
It's building Bob up for the rematch on Action Zone, I believe, this coming weekend.
Build up, Bob.
In your house report. I got to pull this up real fast because I found this the other day and this made me so happy.
Oh, go on.
One of my secret passions, or not so secret passions, is crappy arena names. Because, like, I love a good corporate arena name that's just so terrible. It has no soul to it. Like there's a lot of arenas named for like banks and financial institutions and corporations. I've gotten used to that over the years. Like, but if it's simple, I can live with it. The Staples Center in Los Angeles, you know, Coors Field in Denver. One word, and I can live with that. That's fine. And some of them just get so over the top stupid. It's like, I'll just read it. The Go first on. In your house is taking place in Syracuse.
Okay.
It's supposed to be at the Onondaga County War Memorial.
County War Memorial.
Okay, well, no, it's not that. Because that's what was known as then.
That's quite nice to say, though. Onondaga County War Memorial.
Onondaga. Onondaga.
Onondaga.
It could be Onondaga. I'm not sure. Might be Onondaga.
Onondaga.
So it has since been renamed, this building. It is now. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Upstate Medical University Arena at Onondaga County War Memorial.
Oh, that's just silly.
That's just silly. I know it's ridiculous. I thought one of the worst ones of all time was when the Denver Broncos used to play at Mile High Stadium in Denver because it's the Mile High City. It's that high above sea level. They changed the name to Sports Authority Field at Mile High Stadium. It's like, how about you just pick one?
That's ridiculous. That's the the one thing I can compare that to here in the UK is there was a football team based in a town between England and Wales, a town called Oswestry. Mm-hmm. And the football team went under. Oswestry FC went under, but it was revitalized. It was reborn by a company, and the company insisted that if they're going to bring this team back, they're going to bankroll it, but the team has to be named after the company. And so began the rise of Total Network Solutions FC. And the football pundits on television on Saturday afternoons, when they were playing, would have a field day with this when as they would get abbreviated to TNS were winning. They go, there'll be parties in the streets of Total Network Solutions. But what ended up happening was this company, for one reason or another, stopped funding the club. So the fans took it over and they thought, well, we're going to keep TNS. So they just stopped being called the New Saints instead. So they're now called the New Saints because it fits the initialing. But Total Network Solutions Football Club was seriously a thing for some time in the UK.
So perhaps you're going to bring up the Manchester Arena, which became Phones for You Arena.
Oh, that's pretty common, though, to stupid nonsense like that. Like they, I'm currently looking out of my window and I can see what was formerly known as the Telewest Broadband Arena before it became the Metro Radio Arena. And which is great when you work at a radio station that's a competitor to Metro, because you call it the Newcastle Arena, because fuck you, Metro Radio. We're not even saying your name when we mention the goddamn arena. And now it's the Utilita Services Arena. because approximately 4 people in Newcastle use Utilita Services for their electric and gas. So I'm a big fan of nonsense of sponsorship for clubs like that.
I'm okay with it if it's part of the region's history. Like Pittsburgh has Heinz Field. Okay, well Heinz Condiments is born out of Pittsburgh. It's part of their fabric. Heinz Field, sure. Ford Field in Detroit, Ford Motor Company, it's synonymous with Detroit, fine. Levi's Stadium in California, in Santa Clara, Levi Jeans, born out of that area, very well known, synonymous with the area, fine. But when you're getting to like, you know, these digital corporations that have nothing to do with the area, and these, and the freaking banks. We have here in Philadelphia or in the Philly area, we've had a building that had 4 names in 25 years because the banks keep getting bought out. So whoever buys them out gets the freaking naming rights.
So you get to, when you buy at the bank, you also get the naming rights to them as well. What a lovely little extra treat.
First it was the Core State Center, then it was the First Union Center, then it was the Wachovia Center, and then it became the Wells Fargo Center. It's just pick one.
It loses all its charm, doesn't it? I get why they do it. You know, why a big arena gets a name, but you lose some of the passion. Like the Knickerbocker Arena, like, was a great name for an arena.
The
Pepsi Center. It's like, I prefer the Knickerbocker Arena. It's a lovely name for it.
I prefer Pepsi Center.
How long until Madison Square Garden becomes the Google Arena?
That's owned by a trust, I think.
Well,
that'll never be changed, and if it is, then God forbid.
Well, that's on here now. When Madison Square Garden becomes the Amazon Arena, the Amazon Prime Arena, when you wait and see, that day is coming.
Amazon Prime's been so good to me, so I'd probably be like, you can't grieve forever.
Newcastle's ground, Newcastle's ground. The name of it is just completely fallen out of my head, and I'm literally looking at it from where I am right now. Newcastle United. This is the last bit of football nonsense before we move on. St James's Park. Why did I forget that? St James's Park was briefly called the Sports Direct Arena, which was because the main guy who owns Newcastle United is the guy who owns Sports Direct. Here's the thing. Everybody hates him because he invests all this money into his stores, doesn't spend a penny on Newcastle United. They hate him. And there was fury among the fans when it was going to be renamed the Sports Direct Arena. And it was so much so they were so angry. It ended up going back to St James's Park. and the guy still owns the club, but everybody hates him. It's an ongoing joke amongst Newcastle United fans. If you just say Ashley out, they'll be with you.
So this is Upstate Medical University Arena at Onondaga County War Memorial. A medical university for a war memorial. I like that. It's good contrast.
Yeah, it's fun.
And Todd dates this show by talking about the $14.95 price tag and says, a tank of gas costs more than that.
I've got in my notes here, ask Justin about the price of gas.
Oh, don't get me started on the price of gas.
Don't get me started on the price of gas.
I remember 18 years ago when I was delivering pizzas, when gas costs $1.80 a gallon, I'm like, God, that's steep. Fast forward 5 years, $4.50 a gallon.
Oh, very reasonable.
I was like, let's go back to $1.80 again.
I only have to mortgage once to fill up my car. Very reasonable.
To run down this card, Razor is now going to be in a handicap match facing Jarrett and Rhodey since Kid is injured. Bob Holly later commented in this book he wasn't happy about that development because he thought, like, why not put somebody else in there and give them some rub?
Like Bob Holly, right?
Yeah. Bob Holly should have been in that spot. If you know Jarrett, it made sense.
I mean, like, I think I like to have seen Bob amongst it more at this point. It's funny because whenever you ask Bob what he'd like to do, booking-wise, his answer is always, well, I should just beat everyone and win all the belts.
He's not like that.
Well, that's the general consensus.
He just wants to do something.
Happy beat everyone. Whenever Bruce would ask him, "What do you want to do, Bob?" Bruce went, "Bob would always go, I should have to beat everyone."
If it was real life, I could.
Yes, I mean there is that. There is that. I mean, beat Brock Lesnar. Yeah, all right, mate. Go on then.
Well, Brock's been beaten before. But anyway.
Bob nearly beat him. We live in the timeline where Bob Holly was a tangible threat to Brock Lesnar.
And that's why Brock quit. Now we know the rest of the story. Diesel versus Sid. Todd calls Sid to attack on Sean Slimy. It's like...
That's why it was, because he slipped out of the powerbomb.
Not that Sean Brown beat him for 5 minutes before that. Brett versus Hakushi plus a house.
Who's the house wrestling?
But house is gonna lose because in this era houses were never good.
Hey. You literally couldn't buy a house, Vince. Oh yeah, watch me.
Next week's show, we got Owen versus Bart Gunn. We got Jarrett versus Doink. Stan Lane narrating. I forgot he was still here at this point.
I got here to say, was that Stan Lane on voiceover?
That was Sweet Stan, the gangster of love.
Gangster of love, Sweet Stan.
Now we come to a match that surprised me. Mantar versus Sonny Rogers. Sonny Rogers, for those of you who don't know out there, is a former AWA wrestler. And had been a WWF jobber since 1987. As a matter of fact, I looked up his cage match listing. His first squash match loss was to the One Man Gang in 1987.
Wow, he's done the rounds.
And his last one was to the Truth Commission in 1997.
God. Enhancement for life.
So in other words, he's lost to Americans who pretended to be from Africa at some point in their careers. That appears to be his thing. And Mantar is from the Isle of Crete, which I'm not quite sure where that's at. But...
Well, Crete is in Greece.
Wasn't that the band that sang One?
Where's me?
Well, Mantar's gonna win here.
Hello, I'm Mantar, we meet again.
Release a Mantar for his contract is my sacrifice.
Jim Cornette's sacrifice.
And I learned that Sonny Rogers' last match came in 2005 when he lost to Larry Sweeney.
Ah, Sweet and Sour.
Indeed.
God loves Sweet and Sour.
This man has wrestled Larry Sweeney and the One Man Gang and Mantar.
Why have we not got a special on him? Where's his WWE Untold documentary? Justice for Sonny Rogers.
I bet nobody has that exact resume other than him.
See, I feel bad because those are your notes on Sonny Rogers. The only note I've got for Sonny Rogers here is it looks like he's playing the Rocket Owen Hart in a musical.
It kind of does. He looks like your typical 80s enhancement talent. Long blue tights, scraggly blonde hair. He just looks like he has the look of, I'm going to be counting the lights in about 3 minutes.
He got to the Lost Property box early. He got some of the good stuff.
He got the tasteful attire. So this match, we give Mantar a lot of crap because he's Mantar. It's a bad gimmick. It's mocked to this day. We had called a Hawk, have a little fun with it from time to time. But you know what? This was a really good squash match.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm going to credit part of that to Mr. Rogers here. Not that Mr. Rogers, but this Mr. Rogers. Because he knows what he's doing in there. He's not some local yokel with no experience that's just there to take bumps. This is a guy who's here to enhance Mantar.
Enhance Tar.
Indeed. He's half mandolin, half guitar. So right as the match begins, we get the I did love this move, the Tusk Charge, where he runs out with his hands arms straight out, picks you up like it's a forklift, and runs you into the post. Like he's goring you. I like that.
At least Mantar knows what he is, right? As much as it is wrestle crap, like he's leaning into the role. And I say fair play. You're leaning into it and you're just owning it. And I've got a lot of respect for that.
There is a clear gusto here.
Mm.
A great body Beal, where he just sends Roger flying across the ring. Roger gets his hope offense. Dropkick gets blocked. Mantar gets his violent-looking belly-to-belly at one point. And Rogers is just taking a beating here. Mantar's looking semi-impressive, as I noted here. We get a gorilla press, drop down into the front, and do like a fall away, and then turn into a power slam by Mantar to finish. That looked nice.
Chef's kiss. Chef's kiss. That was a gorgeous finish.
If he had just been Bruiser Mastino the whole time with like the mafioso gimmick, he could have been like a monster heel, like a legit monster heel.
I think he'd have been fine. I think so.
I'm convinced they ruined this guy. Mantar could have actually been something after watching that match.
I still feel like a guy like Mantar, like whilst the military press into the front power slam, the world's strongest slam, was excellent. Surely, like, a good finish for a Mantar would be, like, a pounce a la Monty Brown.
There's that, too.
Kind of give that gore-type vibe.
The only thing is, he's 400 pounds, so he's not very fast. He doesn't have that Monty Brown explosiveness.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the one thing about that.
Mm.
But it was a very good squash match and one of the best parts of this show, in all honesty.
I thought he was great. I thought Sonny Rogers was great as well. I think Sonny played his part beautifully. And he looked competitive but not too competitive. Like, we all knew that Mantar was winning. There was no doubt.
What they would call a hell of a hand.
He was a hell of a hand. A hell of a hand.
Someone good to have around to help out. Tom, your boy, shows up.
Yeah.
Nick.
Good.
For some reason, Nicholas Turturro is back.
Because he wants to be there. And fair play to him. He was the only one at WrestleMania 11 that really gave it his all and really wanted to be. And even was like, I want to do this more often. And I felt like I'm glad they're giving him another shot with this.
He saw his brother do good in quiz show and thought, I need my own quiz show. I know, I'll use wrestling as the stepping stone.
Brilliant. Why not? But this was another spurious segment. I was confused by this.
You say spurious. That's a good word for this.
Spurious.
So he's in the guise of his character from NYPD Blue. He's got an interrogation room, Man Mountain Rock. He says, so are you a wrestler? Or are you a rock and roll guy? I'm both. Well, you can't be both. And this goes back and forth for a bit. Remember, I was like, watch, I'll show you on both. He plays this guitar riff, this loud metal riff. Tatoris impresses, so you're a rock star then? He says, well, I'm a wrestler too. Here, let me show you. And then he kind of forces the tour off camera, and you hear the beating sounds of him presumably in the tour with all sorts of moves and stuff. So now Tatoro is presumably in a crumpled up heap somewhere because Man Mountain Rock has made his point. Well, okay.
As segments go, it wasn't terrible.
No, it wasn't. It says, Man Mountain Rock, member of the new generation.
But my issue with it is that how can Nick Totoro get onto Man Mountain Rock about being a wrestler who has another job when there are so many other wrestlers have other jobs? You have a dustman there. You have a bin man. Get a race car driver. A race car driver. You have a man who's pretending to be an animal hurting people. You'll soon have a dentist, a circus clown,
a country singer,
a roadie,
a tax collector,
an Indian.
A bodybuilding promoter. That's Vince.
Bodybuilding promoter. Weird strippers in Well Done. Why pick on Man Mountain Rock?
Exactly.
What's his crime? Crime.
You're cutting out again.
Am I cutting out? Hang on. Yeah. Let me just. How's that?
Good.
All right, cool. Hang on. I'll just move that there.
Okay.
And also, right, hang on. Also, what's his crime? What's his crime here?
Changing his name without a license?
You were cooler when you were Max Payne. Just very, very odd name. Segment. Very odd segment featuring Nick Turturro.
But now we come to a big match. Razor Ramon versus Psycho Sid.
Here we go. This is the match that the whole show has been built around. I am confident.
They announced it last week. This is going to be so big. Two big men, two big bullies.
Big boys.
Slug it out.
Bouncing meat. Slapping meat.
So, Sid enters, Razor enters, and the match doesn't happen.
What?
Well, see, here's what happened. Usually I hate bait and switches. But see, Sid attacks Razor before the match, and there's no match. And power bombs from Diesel makes a save because apparently the power bomb is like the Diesel signal, a la the bat signal. It summons Diesel from the locker room. Did it to Sean, did it to Bam Bam, did it to Razor. It got to bring Diesel out. But I would usually complain about this, like bait and switch crap. But this gave us one of maybe the most awesome Sid moment ever. You see, for those of you that haven't seen this, when Razor's doing his entrance, he has that trademark pyro that's behind him while he does the me, yeah pose, where we have the columns of pyro falling from the ceiling, and we had sort of like the lawn sprinkler effect behind him as well, going upward, up and outward. Sid jumps in through the pyro and jumps Razor.
And he did the whole Brock Lesnar, like, kip up onto the apron as well when they showed the replay. Mm-hmm. Which was even cooler. And he just plowed through the pyro.
It's like something the friggin' Terminator would do. That was the coolest thing Sid ever did.
It looked very, very cool.
Like not even mocking the guy. That was just, like I ain't messing with this dude. He jumped through fire. So Diesel runs him off. Sid lives to fight another day. And then he mumbles something unintelligible to the camera. Why he's going up the aisleway? I didn't catch any of it.
He said, you will all soon know.
Okay.
So he was hinting. He was like, you will soon all know. Yeah, soon you'll all know. Soon you'll all know. He just kept saying that over and over again.
Okay, no wonder. It didn't make any sense. It's like a mantra. So yes. We get the replay. They're showing Sid clearly jumping through the pyro, which is just like I marked out for that part.
I feel I marked out even more. What they could have done is instead of having it so like the power bombs happen and then Diesel runs him off, I'm just thinking of a way of like just keeping Razor looking cool. Not that he didn't look cool. Could you maybe have had it that Razor still insisted on the match starting? So, like, he's knackered, and he's like, hey, Chico, come on, we'll fight anyway. And the referee asks him, are you sure? The bell sounds, and Sid immediately hits him with another powerbomb, and then the ref throws it out.
Well, I don't understand. Back in those days, one finisher was enough.
Mm.
And Sid's powerbomb is supposed to be lethal. I mean, three of them put Sean... Sean's at home for a while after taking three. Bam Bam somehow survived the one that looked like it was attempted murder.
That's true.
Yeah. Taking one would be like, ring the bell, automatic pin.
Mm.
because it's throwing you from a great height.
It was still cool. So, it was still a really cool bit.
Yeah. But speaking of bombs, Adam Bomb versus Dave Siegfried. Now, speaking of awesome enhancement talents, let's talk about Mr. Siegfried.
Oh, I used another good one this week. Just another guy that just... Now, not the best outfit. Still a very strong outfit, but not the best outfit. Not the best movement, but still very good movement. He's on a... Do you know, any other week, I feel like Dave Siegfried would have stood out a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
I think. But on this particular week, because the enhancement lads are so good, he doesn't stand out as much.
It was the plumage of Ron Hagen that stole the show. Stole everyone's thunder.
Beautiful plumage.
But Siegfried does make up for it with a nice mullet and stash, though.
Nice. He looks. He had a nice retro value to him. Some good facial expressions in here as well.
It's like a squatty LA Gore.
Now, he's been around a while, hasn't he, Siegfried?
Yes, and unfortunately, they never once thought to team with Tony Roy and then do the obvious duo.
This company clearly doesn't want to make any money. That's the only thing I can think of.
Come on.
And have them come out with a tiger.
That's right.
Amazing. He's toned down a bit now, but like in 93 when he was enhancement talenting, he was a swole boy. He was, to quote Ross, he was fit as a butcher's dog in 93. A little bit deflated now compared to where he was. But
there's a reason for that.
It's almost like they got told to stop taking the drugs.
The candies.
Stop taking them lovely candies. Just stop it.
We learned during this match between the Irresistible Force and the Unbookable Object that it's Adam Bomb and Mabel in a King of the Ring qualifying match at the First in Your House.
Oh, no.
It's like I just shuddered and I don't know why.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no, 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 no.
At that point, knowing history the way I do it now, I kind of peered over the horizon and think, is that an iceberg?
At this point, I'm making that noise that stressed out cats make. That no, 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 no.
Trouble brewing.
It's trouble brewing. It was a great bad guy in Dynamite Heady.
So Adam Bomb's facing this big swole guy, and what do we get? We get headlock takeovers.
Yay! They're my favorite. I love matches that are just bristling with headlock takeovers.
Yes, Adam Bomb is very clearly a mat aficionado, by no means a powerhouse. He's here to outmaneuver Siegfried. We actually get a crossbody reversal spot into a pinfall attempt between these two, which I was not expecting. But, I mean, it is what it is. It's Clothesline City after that, and a big diving clothesline to end it.
Adam Bomb has got rid of a lot of his big man move because he was doing the Atom Smasher, which was a power bomb before Diesel and Sid got in there, and I guess he's been told to stop doing that, and now this is the new finish for Adam Bomb.
But you know what he does have that those two don't have?
Oh, he has Bomb Squad stress balls,
miniature Nerf footballs that he throws into the crowd.
I want one. I love that. That's great.
Trip to eBay.
Yeah, can we get some? So they're timed, like as Justin says, they are Nerf balls. They're like squeezy stress ball type things, which have Bomb Squad written on them. They're shaped like a missile. They're great. Mm-hmm. They're brilliant. Adam Bomb is marketable. God damn it. Why is no one giving this guy the belt? I swear to God, I bang this drum every time he's on TV. Why not build the company around Adam Bomb? Why not? He's not the best, but he's certainly not the worst. He's got some decent movesets for a big lad. Like, why not?
That's how you should be marketed.
Yeah. He's got his own marketing. He's got the needs. Oh. Are they available?
No. I found something better.
Oh, go on.
Okay, so I can't find the Nerf Adam Bomb footballs, but what I did find... Someone took a pair of Bret Hart sunglasses and modified them to look like Adam Bomb's goggles and is selling for a thousand British pounds.
I gotta get me a wallet.
and put very rare. I swear to God, this is a thing.
What's the username? Adam Pacitti. Oh, what?
Let's see. Is seller trustworthy?
No!
100% positive feedback for this person.
Is it all the feedback from his mum?
I sent you the link. It's just the back of it. It's just the Bret Hart shades.
Oh, my God. I am excited.
And Adam Bomb apparently signed them.
Hang on. Justin has very kindly furnished me with a link to the items. Oh, you are kidding. They are crap.
Crap, but I almost won them.
So they are. Okay. Now, when Justin says they are modified to look like Adam Bomb's goggles, he is being incredibly polite. What's happened is they're Bret Hart's glasses, and somebody has made like the shape of Adam Bomb's goggles out of what looks like construction paper, shiny construction paper, and has glued it onto Bret Hart's glasses.
I think they just painted like a design. That's all.
It looks like it might be glued on. I can't tell.
I'm enlarging it.
It could be.
I think it's just like airbrushed.
I don't even think they're Bret Hart's glasses.
And they got Brian Clark to sign it, or just write for Adam Bomb themselves.
God damn it! That's pretty awful. I'm a fan.
So for $1,372 American, I could have this.
Oh my God. Delivery in 4 days.
I need to ask Adam for an advance.
Ships from the United Kingdom. Let's see. He's got all good feedback. What else is this guy selling? TNA magazines. He's got a signed Johnny Impact poster. I mean, all the other stuff he seems to have is legit and Impact based.
That's quite a collectible.
I might ask him to throw in the, oh my God, TNA Impact Wrestling Magazine, October 2009, with Hulk Hogan on the front, £220. Gee, I didn't know, I forgot there even was a TNA magazine.
I didn't know there was. Maybe he just published it himself.
Oh yeah, that's a good show.
The hat McKinley was shot in.
A book from the depository. Oh my God. Well, there you go. Link in the description of the podcast. If you would like to own this item, it is on you. We are not encouraging you to buy it. Please don't buy it.
Save your money.
Save your money. Smart, give it to us. Put it in John's Ko-fi account.
Exactly.
John, can you Photoshop yourself wearing Bret Hart's glasses?
Or Adam Bomb's goggles.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Can you please Photoshop John? Photoshop yourself wearing the Bret Hart Adam Bomb glasses.
This next bit made me...
And send it to Undertaker!
This next bit made me queasy.
Okay.
Not Jerry Lawler's psychic queasy, but actual queasy. Now, they're checking on Razor Ramon in the back. Apparently, he suffered a head injury from the powerbomb. Now, with what we know about head injuries today, there's a protocol, concussion protocol. They're very vigilant about helping those with possible head injuries. In 1995, the idea was Razor's sitting in a chair, holding an ice pack to his head, while various road agents surround him. There is not a piece of medical person from medical staff here. It's just Rene Goulet, Jack Lanza, and whoever else. Repeatedly asking me, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? It's like, the guy got landed on his friggin' head. Meanwhile, Ray Rougeau started poking a microphone in. And he's coming on a matter. He's making it sound like it's Godzilla. He goes, somebody has to stop this man. As the camera pans in on Diesel. Very unsubtly. What the hell was this?
It's more the fact that they went, what happened? And Earl Hebner, and like Rougeau said to Earl Hebner, what happened out there? And I'm going, well, it's obvious what happened. Sid Powell bombed him. And Earl Hebner, who was out there, went, I don't know what happened. Sid Powell bombed him.
The referee misses everything.
We all had a coma when I woke up. Sid was gone and Ramon was dead.
Well, I was watching baseball like everybody else is in America at this point. And I turned around and razored it with a big grease stain on the mat from where his hair slicked against it. Now we have a promo from Hunter Hearst Helmsley, who, in a very pronounced accent, talks about civility. I'm here to talk about civility. One day I'll be running this company.
His British accent is adorable, though.
That's what I do when I'm making fun of you.
Yeah. Adam, do you know what? Real. Yeah, just he is doing the Justin Henry British accent.
This is behind the match.
I will now eat a hat whilst we go behind the match.
When I'm meeting all of you.
How are you getting on with your Andrew impression? Because is that because you've nailed Jack. You've nailed Jack impression. You've nailed the Matthew impression. You've nailed the me impression. How are you getting on with an Andrew impression?
I haven't started yet.
All right. Okay. Well, there's some homework for next week.
Well, I don't think I've really done the Jack impression yet. It's you know,
it's perfect.
I was about to C minus because you know, in Tom's mind, you know, a C minus is it's the worst they can get, you know, and Jack sounds like a very tentative Paul McCartney.
Like Paul McCartney getting into a slightly hot bath.
He's like very, very, very passive.
I want you to watch Andrew's stream one night this week, and I'd like an Andrew impression from Justin Henry for next week. Like a nice Yorkshire accent. You don't have to shave your head. Okay. A good phrase to start with is genuine Lego.
But what is he, Carl Sagan?
If you wish to make an apple pie from scratch, you must first invent the universe.
Billions and billions of hours spent editing.
Of hours spent making Lego. Okay. So if you're to work until next week, this is exciting. What a moment this will be.
Speaking of moments, Men on a Mission versus Kevin Kruger and Bill Duke. I got excited because I thought it was Bill Duke from Predator. Sergeant Mac. I realized it wasn't. I was disappointed.
I got excited because I thought it was Freddy Krueger.
Because if Vince can say, Bill Duke, the best actor in Predator, as a shot at Jesse Ventura. A little passive-aggressive from Vince. So, but now, this is part of the Mabel promotional push. But the true highlight of this match is when Kevin Kruger's trying to make a comeback and starts throwing these little wimpy punches at Mabel. And Vince calls him lame right hands. Vince is burying the jobber for
even his Vince strike. Hates him.
That's the kiss of death. It was Kevin Kruger. So the first thing I could think of was Kruger from Seinfeld from the Festivus episode. Like, Kruger, my son tells me your comeback in the match stinks. And then Vince is so bored that not only is he burying Kruger's offense, he buries Mo for having a big ass. He does.
I didn't hear that.
It's like, there it is written across the sizable derriere of Mo.
Vince.
Vince has just had enough of this show. I can't blame him.
Vince, you signed off on that outfit.
Yeah.
Don't give him grief. You said that was all right.
Well, Mo beats him down, keeps not taking the pin because he wants to keep inflicting punishment. And he goes for a chin lock after not taking the pin. And Vince is like, disqualify him for unsportsmanlike. Like, when you're the commentator calling for, you know, disqualifications for not taking a pinfall or not accepting a pinfall on your opponent, that means the guy's not over. Like, let's build some heat for these guys. We'll use that to get the crowd to hate them because they're unsportsmanlike. We get the corner club sandwich on Bill Duke. Mabel finishes with this crushing belly to belly. After match, they go into this taunt rap thing that Vince and Lawler just talk over and cut off. It's like they're trying to do a bit, and you're just like, oh, let's move on to the next thing.
Just men on a mission are boring. As heels, they're boring. They've lost their magic.
Well, if they're boring heels, you know, you gotta give them some big wins in order to build them back up.
No, to iceberg.
It's like, shouldn't we steer that way?
No, let's go towards it.
You have to engage the iceberg.
We're playing chicken with an iceberg now, Justin. I think we'll win.
It'll jump out of the way.
Yeah, of course it will.
Always does. Sissy iceberg.
Stupid sexy iceberg.
Can take a hint. So we got a plug for Doink and Jarrett for next week and Bart and Owen. Then Vince actually says that Doink and Jarrett's going to pale to Bart versus Owen. He's buried his own show. What is Vince doing on the show?
Vince, I think Vince has had enough by this point.
he's getting tired and punchy. Then Bret Hart arrives. Crowd's happy to see him because Laura's been talking about this contract all night, this open contract for In Your House. He calls Lawler a liar for saying that Bret was ducking him. He's committed to beating Hakushi In Your House. Lawler tries to call him, and Bret with a good shut up right in his direction. Shut up!
That was the best part of Bret's promo, yeah, was that shut up.
That was the, if your dad yelled at you that way, you'd freeze. Shut up. That was a good shut up. So Bret agrees that the second match is going to work twice In Your House versus Hakushi and versus Lawler. And then we get the bog standard In Your House straight to the outhouse joke about Lawler. And Bret leaves and Lawler's laughing.
The issue here was there was a bit of Bret's delivery that confused me somewhat, right? Because he went, I'm going to wrestle Hakushi in your house. And then Jerry, I'm going to wrestle you in your house. Which made me think, what is he going to his house to wrestle him? No, but what he meant was, yeah, exactly. Is he going to invade his house? Like, what he meant was, no, I'll wrestle you on the same night at the pay-per-view. But because Bret, I don't know whether he did it subconsciously or whatever, put the inflection on your, that made me think, what, are we getting a cinematic match as well?
Bret's been listening to Peter Gabriel's Intruder for last week. Doom, 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 doom. I know about creeping across floors, putting windows and doors. I can't remember the exact.
Sledgehammer.
We already saw him earlier. He did a vignette.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, he's been on, hasn't he?
So, yes, In Your House is starting to stack a little bit.
Getting two Bret matches.
I'm okay with two Bret matches.
Two Bret matches will save the day. And one of them is Hakushi, so that's cool.
Absolutely. So that's Raw for this week. We have one more show, and then we got our first ever In Your House watch-along.
Yeah, we've made it to In Your House. This is quite exciting, isn't it?
I know, I'm excited.
Big fan of landing on Ila In Your House. Not a bad show, actually. Well, I watched it on my own and went, it's actually quite a... an easy to digest show. There were lots of this was right. Instead, you know, that one night where we had Bret and Owen one-on-one for the whole night. Mm-hmm. That was like having a big British roast dinner of a show.
Okay.
This was wrestling tapas. So it was lots of little dishes served quickly. And I was all right with that because we had a big beefy power match. We had a fast paced match. We had a bit with Sid and Ramon that looked pretty deadly. We had Adam Bomb. Why aren't you pushing Adam Bomb? God damn it. And then Men on a Mission turned up as like the last, you're feeling very full of tapas. And then they turned up with like some rather large sausages and you're like, I can't eat anymore. I'm quite full now. And these are a bit heavy. You sit a bit heavy on me. So, wrestling tapas.
It's five jobber squashes, but then next week we have two theoretical main guy versus main guy matches, and Jared Doink and Owen Bart. So it's kind of a weird imbalance there.
I like how you say theoretical.
Well, it's Doink ain't long for this company.
He's nearly done, isn't he?
Just about.
Oh, well, look, we'll talk on that next week, but that is Monday Night Raw. Once again, thank you for joining us. And until we gather next week to talk more about wrestling in 1995, here's at JRH Rising on Twitter. I am at Tom Campbell on Twitter. Together, we are at Cultaholic on Twitter. Don't forget to join us, Ron Hagen is your takeaway from this show.
The Sherbert Dandy.
Love you, bye. The Sherbert Dandy.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.